Hello and welcome to Philosophy with Will Anderson. I am Will Anderson from the title of the podcast, and today's episode is a very special one, a bit of a different one. You're about to meet an amazing man, and I met this amazing man one day when he pressed the doorbell on the new house that I have moved into and introduced himself as my next door neighbor. His name is Phil McDonald, and he has, it turns out, an amazing story to tell. Here's the thing. I don't want to do too much of it in the intro because it's such a great surprise as I learn about some of it. But Phil and I were having a conversation one day. He firstly introduced himself, just a lovely guy, 72 years old, Phil, and he offered to come over and trim the hedge that's in between our two houses, which was a very nice and generous thing to do. So he came over one day and you think, oh, well, it's nice. We've moved into this new area and what a lovely guy to have as a next door neighbor. And I got to meet his lovely wife, Susan, and she was also really wonderful and welcoming, and they were just an absolutely loving couple, you could absolutely tell. But it turns out that they are also adventurers, and you're going to hear about the adventure that Phil and Susan are on at the moment and some of the adventures that Phil has had previously in his life. Now, the first one I was aware of was the reason that we sat down to do the podcast, but as we talked, as you will get to hear, I discover more about Phil as well as the podcast goes on. Like I said, I don't want to do too much. I could tell you some more about Phil and the things he's done to try to hook you into listening to this podcast, but in doing that, it would be like showing a preview to a movie where they put all the best bits in the preview, and then you think you've seen the whole movie. Well, all I will say to you is, if you've tuned into this one, have a listen, stick with it. I think you're about to have your mind blown by the adventures of a man who I discovered living next door to me. Here's what you can do. Once you've heard this episode, I think you will want to follow the adventure and maybe even contribute and support the adventure that you're about to hear about today. So when you do, you can go to philsusanmcdonald.com and you will hear about the adventure that they are on right now, that they have already started and they are off on. It is a pretty amazing, stunning adventure that will take them almost half a year. Anyway, again, I don't want to give too much away. Just please stick around, listen to this story, and enjoy Phil talking about his life. If you like the podcast, the best way to keep it going is to support us at patreon.com/tofop, T-O-F-O-P. But today, if you want to support something, I would recommend instead supporting Phil and Susan McDonald. They are doing the adventure that they are doing in order to raise money for the Fred Hollows Foundation. They've always been big supporters of charity. And so if you can go to their website, philsusanmcdonald.com, there is a button on there where you can donate and help support the adventure and help support the Fred Hollows Foundation. Anyway, so this week, if you want to contribute to the podcast, that's what I recommend you do. Go there, have a look around, follow their blog and all the information that they're updating along the journey. And I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I'll talk to you again soon. Hello and welcome to Philosophy with Will Anderson. I am Will Anderson from the title of the podcast. This is a bit of a different episode today. Normally, it's fair to say, I would say that people could have a look at the name on the episode or the picture of the person on the episode and they might immediately know who they are. Today, you may or may not know who our next guest is, but this is how the podcast starts anyway. I say guest, who are you?
Phil McDonald.
Now, Phil, how do we know each other?
Next door neighbors.
We are.
Yeah.
I have just moved into a new house in Melbourne and Phil is my next door neighbor, immediate next door. Definitely number one in the friendliest of people in the neighborhood.
Thank you. I like that.
Made himself known very early on. You've come over and trimmed our communal hedge for me already, which...
Yeah. Yeah, I knocked on your front door first and to see what you're like, and yeah, you're a nice guy, so I thought I'd cut your hedge then.
Now, Phil, the reason that I've got you on the podcast is we were having a chat out in the back the other day, and I discovered something absolutely amazing about you, and I wanted to get you on the podcast to talk about that, but as we've chatted more and more, I feel like this tale is going to become more and more interesting, because the more I'm learning, the more that I feel like there's a whole bunch of things that I don't quite know. So, Phil, the way that I normally start this podcast is I ask people if they have a philosophy towards something. It can be towards work, life, love, anything, a motto of some kind, a way that, you know, a philosophy through which people sort of live their life. And you strike me as a man who might have one or two, I think.
Well, I have got lots of things in mind, but I haven't really put anything together. But I thought, I went for an 18K walk this morning, and I thought, I'm seeing Will later on, I've got to get something here. So this is a little bit of a brief of what I think and what my philosophy, and you've got your philosophy. I, Phil, have got my philosophy, so how about that?
I don't like that you're coming in with all this good branding, Phil.
But explore the unknown, risk failure and fame, share your energy and friendship, because nothing stays the same.
Oh, Phil, I love it. Good job. Well, so that's what an 18K walk will do. It'll clear the mind, give you an opportunity to think about something.
Yeah.
Well, let's start talking about why you were on an 18K walk this morning, because that'll get us into what started me thinking about this conversation, and then we can go more broadly. But let's talk about that first. Why did you go for an 18K walk this morning, Phil?
Well, I have in 2 weeks' time, on the 6th of May, I'm leaving Royal Park, Melbourne, and walking from Royal Park right up to Corumba in northern Queensland, following the Burke and Wills route. And so I thought I better start doing some training. So I did a 10K walk yesterday and an 18K today. I'll probably do a 35 or something, and probably Wednesday or something like that. And another, maybe creep up to 40. And then I should be primed. Then I'll give myself 3 or 4 days rest. And then May the 6th, I head off on 3,200 kilometer trek.
Now, firstly, I think that's more training than Burke and Wills put into it. So
I
think that's the good news. And you did tell me happily that you're not going to try to come back as well. That's
well,
the mistake
that's
they
exactly
made.
Right. They did do the complete crossing of Australia. And why they were doing it, of course, is to see if they could get the communication lines across and right through Asia and so on. But John McDougall Stewart, he had left Adelaide going up the centre, which is going up through Alice Springs and so on, which wasn't there then, but he was finding a route up there. And Burke and Wills, they, Victoria, were wanting to beat South Australia. So while Burke and Wills are going up there, they were racing John McDougall Stewart, but they didn't know that John McDougall Stewart had come back. So they were going in ridiculous time of the year. They left Melbourne on the 20th of August, then they left Cooper Creek on the 16th of December. You can imagine how hot it would be up at Cooper's Creek on the 16th of December. And they're going further north, right up to the top of Australia, and that's going to be thunder and lightning, it's going to be torrential rain, it's going to be humidity. It's just the wrong time to be there. So they should have just given up then. But as you said, yes, they came back, and of course they died at Cooper's Creek, and they'd already achieved what they wanted to do, is cross Australia. So I'm not going to come back.
What made you fascinated in doing this particular walk? What was take me back to why you decided that you were going to do this in the first place?
Yeah, I was a 15-year-old. I wasn't a book reader, but I found this book on Cooper's Creek by Alan Moorhead, and Burke and Wills, you know, crossing Australia. And it fascinated me, and I thought, wow, that's real adventure. Unfortunately, it was a tragic adventure, but it was something, and I thought, I've got to see that place. So when I got a license when I was 18, probably a year later, I went up to Cooper's Creek. I went to Innamenka and Birdsville and all of these places. And I nearly lost my life as well because I got stuck on the Birdsville track without any... and that was in the middle of summer. But, yeah, so that's sort of how I got involved. And I thought, I love Australia. And I've been around Australia quite a few times for different reasons. And then I retired from running a bicycle business 2 years ago. And I had a coronary blockage. And I had to go and had a stent put in my coronary artery. And I did rehab. And the nurse said to me, she said, look, you've got to do walking. You've got to walk every day. And I walked out of that hospital and I thought, walk every day. You know, I thought, what can I do, you know? I thought, well, maybe I'll do the Birkin Mills track. So I asked
She was probably thinking just, you know, take the dog for a couple of laps around the block, Phil, I think.
Well, that's what it was supposed to be, but I'm a little bit eccentric, I suppose. And I thought, well, yeah, I could do that. So I had to come home with my tail between my legs and said to Susan, I said, hey, Suze, I'm thinking of, you know, I've been told to walk every day, so I think of walking the Birkin Mills track. And
how did that conversation go? Was she, because she's going with you, of course. She's of your course, support.
She's my support.
Yes.
I can't go unless Susan supports me and drives the car. We've got to have the car. She doesn't really want to be towing caravans and trailers and all that sort of thing. And neither do I. And so we've got the Land Cruiser and we sleep in the car. We eat outside the car. We've got a little awning and and we set ourselves up there and we... It's not much good setting up too comfortably because we're moving every day. And, you know, I'll be averaging 30 Ks a day, but some days 35, some days 40, some days 20, but it's an average of 30 K. And Susan is a very, very important part of that expedition.
When you're walking, are you just walking? I'm interested in this because I walk a lot, but I'm a big listener to things. Like, you know, that's where I catch up on my world. You know, I listen to a lot of radio shows and podcasts and stuff, and I tend to get that done as I go about. But what do you do? What's your, are you listening to music? Are you in your own thoughts? Are you walking without someone in your ear? Like, what's your kind of method to get into the zone?
Yes, it is music. I love music. My dad was a great pianist. My sister's a pianist. I love singing. I love music. So I do listen to a lot of music. And I'm going to listen to Will Anderson's podcast from now on. Because that will pass a lot of time and very interesting. And also while I'm planning, I bought myself a tape recorder. And I'm going to be recording my life, actually. And... interesting that you ask that, because that's what I'm going to do, and I have to write a book when I come home, because it's not just this walk. It's I've had a few experiences throughout my life, so, and I thought I'd share it with. We've got 15 grandchildren, and they really know nothing about us, and we could drop off the perch tomorrow, and so I thought I should jot a few things down.
Yeah. Well, Phil, hopefully I'm going to get them listening to the podcast at the very least. They'll have this. They can tune in.
Wow, that'd be very nice. Thank you.
So, tell me about some of the adventures you've done previous to this. I want to mention, by the way, that you're doing this also for the Fred Hollows Foundation.
Yes.
So people can actually donate, and I'll give people all the details and the link and stuff at the start of the episode so that they can actually go and work out. But why, before we move on, why did you choose the Fred Hollows Foundation?
Well, as I was saying, we did bicycle tours for the last 20 years and bicycle tours all around Australia and usually city to city and so on. But I wanted a bit of a excitement, as I said, that I like Central Australia. And I used to take my son and his mate up to Bourke, and we used to ride motorbikes up there. So I thought I might do a bike ride from the back of Bourke to Bourke Street. Sounds pretty good. So I did a bit of research there, and I saw that Fred Hollows is buried at Bourke.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's buried at Bourke in the cemetery there. So I thought, well, that'd be nice. We could have a sort of a bit of a service type thing at his grave site and then start the ride from there. So that's what we did. We had about 35 people came on the bike ride. We bussed them all up there And then we started off at Fred Hollows Foundation, or Fred Hollows Grave. And I got in touch with Fred Hollows and said, I'll raise some money if you want to. And they said, yeah, please do. So we raised about $33,000 for that one ride. So all the bike riders went out and saw the different people and said, I'm riding from the back of Bourke to Bourke Street. And we raised a lot of money. And the first day, I think, was about 150 Ks. The second day was 254 Ks. And it was tough. It was a big, big ride. But they did it. A couple of them might have got in the bus, but it was a fantastic ride. So that was my association with Fred Hollows. And we did that. We raised in total for about $165,000 for Fred. And but then they were not really organised so much for what we were doing because people wanted receipts and so on. Mm. So I was talking to MS, and they were saying that, you know, they're more applied to that sort of thing. So we've raised about another $150,000 for MS, and it just goes on.
I mean, that's fantastic. My great friend Adam Spencer, who I used to do radio with, he had a bad eye when he was born, and he had his eye operated on by Fred Hollows, and they became quite good friends over their lifetime. And so I always have a great awareness of things that are done in the name of the Fred Hollows Foundation and the amazing work that they have done. What a fantastic Australian.
Yeah.
So where does this spirit of adventure come from for you? Have you always had it? Where were you born? Where are you from originally?
I was born in the Mercy Hospital in East Melbourne. And we lived in Ivanhoe. It's beside the Darabin Creek. And I loved nature and the Darabin Creek. And I played down there with my mates, and it was just fantastic. I loved it, and I think I learned a lot down there. And there was an older guy I can remember. It was my cousin, actually, and we used to go for walks with him, and he used to take us on challenges, and he'd climb up a tree and jump down, and us little kids, maybe we were 10 or 12 or something, I don't know, but we had to jump, and we had to cross creeks, and we had to jump as far as we could, and that was real adventure for me. And Mum could never... I got a watch when I was about probably 5 or 6 because I never came home. And I can remember that. But I only had it for about a week, and we used to catch frogs all the time, and I'd dive my hand in and grab the frogs, and the watch stopped, and I said to Mum, I need another watch. And she said, So they gave me a big free rein, right. And I loved that. And I am a bit... bit stupid with a lot of things, but anyway, I do that, and luckily I get away with it. And so it's just been adventure, and that Bourke and Wills book really opened up a lot more for me by traveling around Australia so
the idea of traveling around Australia, I think, is a fascinating one. I've been really lucky through a couple of experiences I had in my life. One was when I was in between year 11 and year 12 at school, an organisation called the Lions Club used to run this thing called Lions Youth of the Year. They may still have it, I'm not sure. But it's essentially a public speaking competition with some elements of community service and some stuff around it. But essentially it's a public speaking competition.
Yeah.
And the prize, they collect all the sort of national finalists, and they take them on this 7-week trip around Australia, essentially, together. So there's you know, one from each state, all the kind of, and we all speak it. So the kind of model of it is, you're looked after in each place by, particular Lions Clubs, and the sort of cost of doing business is we all do our little speeches at the Lions Club, night, and that's, but it was a great opportunity for me to see parts of Australia that I, at that stage, had never had the opportunity to see. And I must admit that it was my great summer romance. Like, I fell in love with this country in a way that I was not aware at that point. And since have, through my job, the capacity to tour places, there's not much in this country that I haven't got to see.
That's very good.
And as someone who has explored it, know that I think there is so much of this country that people never see that they would be surprised to know exists. Yes? Yeah,
true. Very true. And the people, the country and the people. And so when I was going up, I'm talking, I'm 72 now. So, 20, 25 years of age, we were going up there, and it was all four-wheel drives, or two-wheel drives, but doing the four-wheel drive tracks. And there were no coaches or very, very few coaches. So when you got into the pubs, you met the guys that were driving the four-wheel drives and they just had one hell of a time or they'd bogged for a week or something like that. So there's all stories to talk about, you know. And so it was very different. Now there's the roads are made and the cars are much, much more capable of doing what they can do. And so it has changed. So it was fascinating to meet all the people. And we used to just love going in the pubs and having a few drinks, and you know that you don't have to drive anymore, so you can just sleep out in the back of the hotel or wherever you wanted to. We usually camped. We didn't have any money, and so the pubs had all the stickers and all the different jokes and everything all the way on the walls, and that was fantastic, and we just loved it.
So what was the first sort of big adventure like this one that you're about to do that you did?
Yeah, I suppose I used to be a smoker and a drinker,
mm-hmm.
and doing everything else. And it was New Year's Eve when I was 49, and I thought, what am I going to do for the New Year's Eve resolution? And I thought, I'll run 50 k's a day from the lowest point in Australia to the highest point. So I did that when I was about 51, 52 or something. And I'd met Susan then, and I said to her, I dropped another one on her. I said, hey, Suze, I said, when I was 49, I said that I was going to, that's right, I was smoking, I was going to have my next smoke, yep. on the top of Mount Kosciuszko. So anyway, I said, do you want to support me? She said, yeah, sure. So she drove the 50K, so I came down to St Kilda Pier here and stripped off and had a naked swim there, and I thought that was pretty good. And freezing cold. And then I took off and I ran all the way to Coldstream. And and Susan drove to Coldstream, so she measured the distance, of course. And at that time I was living in Lilydale, so we just came back and slept the night at home. And then the next day we went on to, I can't remember, it was up in the Black Spur, I think. It was another 50 Ks, and I kept on going to the 50 Ks. And I did that, and so that was my real adventure. I did a 50 Ks all the time for 12 days.
What was, I mean, I can't, if you hadn't been training for that though, right? Or you had
well,
been?
Well, I wasn't really, I had run a marathon about 10 years before.
Yeah.
But I said to Susan, I said, I'm going to train for this. So I did a 5K. For every week, I did 5K, yeah. 10K, 15K, 20K, and I did right up to 50K. And so I did 5Ks, increased it every week. And then I took off and I did my 50K every day.
I imagine there's got to be.
I was pretty lucky, but anyway, that's what
I was going to say. If you're doing 50K a day, because that's like, you know, a marathon every single day,
yeah.
and you're going uphill.
This
is not only are you running a marathon every day, but you've decided to make the entire thing essentially uphill,
actually what I was doing, because we were doing bike tours, and I thought I might do a bike ride from Kosciuszko to St Kilda, or maybe up, but nobody wants to go up, they want to go down. So that was actually we're checking it out, a reconnaissance.
Right.
For the bike ride. So we did that, and I think the next year then we did a bike ride from Kosciuszko down to St Kilda.
Oh, back down the other way.
Yeah, back down. And so, that was sort of my first one, and I did various other things. I can't remember what they are, but it followed then that I found out that Lake Eyre is the lowest point in Australia, not sea level.
Right.
And I was doing some more research to do a bike ride up the Mawson Trail, and I know this was in 2013, and I noticed in 2014 was when Mawson returned from the Antarctic, and I thought, wow, you know, I've been talking about going from the lowest point, sea level to the lowest point, so I thought, well, I might as well run from Port Augusta to Lake Eyre, was 690K, I did this in 2014, and but in training to do that, I was running anyway, and I strained my Achilles heel and I couldn't walk properly a week before. So I went over there with Susan anyway, and I walked, And I walked and I walked and I walked my 42 Ks. I did a marathon every day. And, it's very different to running. And I got massive blisters on my feet and I wasn't really decked out for it at all. So it was a really tough effort. And I raised $25,000 for my niece who had breast cancer. Yeah.
So when you're struggling through that, I'm interested in this, when you hit moments within these things, and I'm sure there's going to be, you have to prepare yourself for the fact that on this walk, you're going to have some tough times as well as some, good times. How do you prepare yourself for that? Mentally prepare yourself for that?
I think I've done it all my life, because as you say, it is mentally, you have to be mental to do it. And really, you've got to, your brain, sometimes your legs get sore or you get just a couple of weeks ago when I was doing some walks, I had a sore foot. And I pushed through that for about a kilometre and I was nearly going to have to stop. But somehow it goes away. And I think a lot of it is to do with your brain. And I've pushed my body all the time and I always push that bit further. And so mentally I think I'm quite strong. And by the way, I was talking about giving up cigarettes and the next one was going to be up in Kosciuszko. When I got to the Kosciuszko, getting off the subject a bit, but Susan pulled out the smokes. And here we got photos of me, but they were lolly smokes, So I never had a smoke again after that anyway. But mental, you have to be mental and really push through the barriers and I've trained myself all the time for that.
I mean, it's an amazing connection that you seem to have between, it seems to be not only about the challenge itself, but its connection to a story. Like that's what seems to keep coming up with me. It's like, I learnt this fact about this, or I heard this story about this person, or I read this story about this person and what they did. And then I had this idea that I would do this other thing, which I think is such a lovely way to be not only learning about the place where you live, but then sort of, I guess, practically involving yourself in. I mean, it's one thing to know the story of Burke and Wills, but another thing to be able to say, oh yeah, I walked that.
Yeah.
You know what they walked? I walked it as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an amazing leap of, what is it that, other than the fact that it's something that you've always done, what is it that still drives you to want to do things like this, I guess is the question.
I suppose I want to extend my life as long as possible and push the boundaries and, at my age now, I think that I've still got it in me. I'll find out. I'll find out when I get out on that road. And
is there fears that, I mean, you think you've still got it in it. Is there fears from anyone around you who goes, Phil, you're 72.
You're looking a little bit down.
No, I'm not saying. I'm just asking the question, Phil. There must be some friends and family, or are they all just like, no, that's Phil. This is what
I am. I am really amazed that nobody has ever doubted me.
Right.
And I'm amazed at that. And in doing the bicycle tours all around Australia and different places, we go to so many motels and we say, can we book 20 rooms or 30 rooms? And very, very few people ever question that. They say, yeah, sure, you can book 30 rooms and we don't put a deposit down. And it's the same I've said, I don't tell a whole lot of people what I'm doing, but really, nobody has said you're joking or get real, They sort of, they probably, in their brain, they probably say idiot, dickhead, or whatever. But it's surprising that very few people show any doubt. And I have a lot of, praise for the people. They just accept people for who they are and go out and do it if you want to.
I mean, that is the amazing message at the heart of it, isn't it? That you can actually just do these things.
Yeah.
You can dream something and then decide you are going to do it. Now, something that you mentioned to me just in passing before we started recording, which is a whole other one, was you said it reminded of you when you rode a penny farthing around Australia, and you just dropped that as if that was just an incidental little part of this story. But I feel like, Phil, that's something that we should be exploring a little bit more. So hang on, what did you do? Am I right? You rode a penny farthing around Australia?
In 1988, in the bicentennial year. Have you got any time? I can tell you.
We've got time. Tell me, please. You live next door, mate. It's fine. You're not in a rush to get home.
Well, it was actually it was in the local paper. I lived at Lilydale, and I saw a penny farthing advertised for sale in a clearing sale. And I thought, and I had a big 130-year-old home up there and with a veranda all the way around. And I thought, I'll buy this penny and put on the veranda. It'll be good fun, you know. And so I went to the auction and here's this old penny. And I took $300 and I was going to buy a few other things as well. And went to the auction and here's this old penny and a lot of spokes had gone and a few other things were not on it. And anyway, the auction came up. What have we got for the penny? $1,000. Thank you. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. I came in at 1600. Somebody went to 1700. I got it for $1,800. And I thought, wow, you know, I've been stooged here because it was all over in a shot.
Yeah.
And the guy that I'd outbid, he came up and said, I'll give you $1,900 for it. I thought, wow, okay. It must be worth its money.
Right, yeah.
So I said, no, I'm going to keep it. And he said, well, we're starting the penny farthing championships over in Launceston, in Evandale, next year. You know, you'll have to come over. I thought, well, you know, so I got on this bike and I had to have it all fixed up first and got riding it. And that was good fun. We raced over in Tasmania there. And then the guy said, we're going to have a bike ride from Adelaide to Melbourne. And I thought, wow, I would love that. And anyway, I was quite excited about it all, and I found out that they're gradually dropping off, and I thought, well, I'm going to do it on my own.
Right.
So I did it on my own. I rode from Adelaide to Melbourne in 4.5 days. I averaged whatever that is, a couple hundred K a day or something.
What's your top speed you can get to on a penny farthing?
About 45K.
45K.
Mm. It's a fixed wheel.
Yeah.
And there's no brakes. And you've got to be silly, but that's what it is. And so I rode from there. And when I finished, somebody said, well, I was being interviewed, and they said, what are you going to do next? And I said, well, I could ride around Australia if I wanted to. And then I realised that was not in 1986. And I realised then that 1988, bicentennial year, wow, I could do that. And so I got in touch with Rotary and I said, you know, I'll raise some money for Rotary. And they said, well, they did doubt me. They said, this is a bit of a joke, you know. But anyway, they even allowed me to put the tail of the penny on the rotary wheel, you know, the rotary wheel.
Yeah.
I was even allowed to, which was quite weird, but they allowed that. I had to go through a bit of... So I used that logo of Rotary with the tail on it. And and I rode right around and raised over $100,000 for Rotary.
So how long did it take you to ride around Australia?
It was 4.5 months and I averaged about 100 Ks a day. Yeah.
And so what was the most challenging thing about that trip? Tell me, because that, I mean, that's a good example in some ways of, because it's about the same time period as what you're about to embark on now. Obviously a very different thing to do, but a similar sort of time period, right? Yeah. So you kind of understand what that takes. And if people think about this, I mean, this is months. If you think about what, you know, anyone listening to this might have done in the last 4 or 5 months, it's a considerable amount of time that you will be embarking on this project. So when you're doing something like that, which is, you know, a third of your year, nearly half of your year, what was the most challenging part of riding the penny farthing around Australia?
Well, it was probably going downhill.
Where was the most dangerous hill that you
well,
went
all
down
up the east coast, yeah. All up the east coast, you've got all the hills, and I'm fairly good at climbing hills. I taught myself to climb hills because you have to, and but you've got one gear, and you're standing up, so you're sitting upright, so you can't actually stand up on your bike. You've just got to push, but when you get up, as soon as you get up there, then you're starting to go down and you've got no brakes. It's a fixed wheel. So you've got to try and push back on the pedals. And I used to say to myself all the time, push back, push back, push back, because you really have to concentrate. And you push back because if it lets go, or you can't hold it back any further, then it will take off and then you will go very, very fast. So fast that you know, whatever it is, so you've got to crash straight away because, and when I bought the bike, by the way, the guy told me that you won't be able to ride it anyway. And I said, how come? And he said, it's too big for you. And I thought, wow, I didn't know they made them any different sizes. So, and the, I'm getting off the track a little but the seat, it was on spring steel and the backbone went on an angle and the spring steel went out, so you had suspension on your seat. So I took my suspension off and put the seat right onto the backbone. So I've got it right on the, and it's a constant vibration, much more so than you'd ever get. And so going down the hills, and so also jumping off then, when you'd be sitting on the seat, you could reach back because your legs were longer and you could get this little peg and then you'd step off the back to get off your bike. So I could never reach that peg. So the only way I could jump off my penny was like jumping off a horse when the pedal was on its lowest point. I would jump off like jumping off a horse, see? And so going down the hills, if the bike got out of control, I can't even get off because I can't jump off like jumping off a horse. So, I had some very interesting times going down hills, and I've got to assess it straight away whether I jump off, but I like a challenge, so I would go down them and it might take me three quarters of an hour, half an hour to get down a hill because I'm going about 0 mile an hour and I'm holding the bike back, and it uses different muscles as well, you know, than pushing. You're pushing back, and so that was very tough. I suppose that was the toughest and the most dangerous. And one time I was over near Canberra somewhere, and I was going down the hill because we went in to see the Prime Minister, who did in front anyway. But I was going down a hill, and I'm really concentrating, and it was a long hill, and I was going down, and then a semi-trailer blew his horn. You know, good on you, mate. Well, it frightened the hell out of me, and I lost my concentration, and straight away the bike started taking off, and he's going down the hill slow as well, not going too fast because of downhill. So I'm catching up to the semi again, and I'm going to have to start passing him because I could look down the bottom of the hill, and I guessed, I couldn't see the bottom of it, but it went around, but I could see the landscape was leveling out. So I let the bike go. See, and I'm probably doing 40 or 50 or 60 k's an hour or something. And luckily I was catching up to the semi, and but anyway, he had sort of sped off a little bit anyway, so I got away with that. But it's pretty scary and very dangerous because if I fall off the penny then, I've smashed my face. And you also got the handlebars right across your lap, so you can't put your legs out. The only place you go on a penny is straight over the front, and you'll hit the. And so what I used to also do sometimes is throw my legs over the handlebars and then let it rip down a hill that I could see the bottom. And then if something did happen, at least I'm off and running at about 60 k's an hour. But it was a safer way than smashing your face on the tarmac.
I mean, another safer way would to not do it. Well, get a bike, buy a safe bike that fitted you and ride that around Australia.
It would. And see, they've never worked out brakes because if you have it on the back wheel, there's no weight on the back wheel. Right. And you're sitting on the right on the top of that wheel. And the bike that I've got is just about vertical, so it's a real sort of a racing bike, whereas the forks on other bikes can be leaning back further and they are safer to ride, and they're not as vertical. So when I started to go down the hill, I'm really leaning back and holding it back. So, yeah, apart from the hills, and I love the hills anyway, I love the challenge. And of course, there's traffic all the time going around Australia. And I had a support crew. I had Dennis and Tiny with me, and also another girl named Kay who did a lot of sort of setting up for the Rotary, because I spoke at Rotary clubs all around Australia, so it was a fantastic thing.
It feels like this spirit of adventure, you know, obviously has been with you a lot of your life. Like, I mean, the stories that I'm hearing from, you know, when you're young to all these adventures, it feels like you have been enticed by the nature of adventure itself. There is a question I always ask in this podcast, and I think it seems more relevant to this one than many of the ones that I've done, which is I always like to ask people about the idea of death and whether they think about death and whether death is something that, you know, worries them or is present in their thoughts or whether it's not something that they think about at all. For someone who pretty much you've just described to me for the last half an hour about 80 ways you could have killed yourself, I'm interested in how you clearly don't have a particular, well, or maybe you do. I'll let you answer the question rather than me trying to answer it. What relationship does all this have to death? Are you not scared of it, or is this all some sort of, you know, big middle finger up at the universe, at the very nature of death, and I'll defy you and live as large as I can? Where do you think about death at all? Has it ever been something that has been in your thoughts as you've got embarked on these adventures?
I have certainly thought about death, and it doesn't really frighten me. I put as much into my life as I can, and I'm very cautious in what I do. People think that I'm stupid and silly, but I think that I'm quite safe. And luckily, I have been safe. I have had a lot of luck in my life. I'm sure that most people will say that. And I'm not really afraid of death. And I know it's going to come sometime. And I think, well, it's only greed. If you want to live to 70 or 80 or 90, you're being greedy, aren't you? You're sort of... you know, I'm not thinking about others then, but for yourself, you know, I want to live life and enjoy it as much as I can, and I think I'm still fit enough to do a lot of things, so I push myself, and I don't want to die, but I've got too many beautiful people looking after me and beautiful people in my life, but it doesn't really frighten me. I'm happy to get out there and push the boundaries. And I know in walking the Burke Mills Trek, there's some roads there that we're on the highway with the big trucks and so on. And Susan and I were up in Queensland last year, and I did 40K days just to see what I was like. And I remember there was a lot of trucks that was up near the mines up there, and the trucks were going past me, and that's okay, and I'd look at them and usually duck my head just before they went past because they'd be throwing stones up. And then a car was coming along towards me, and he swerved straight over right at me. And I had to jump off the side of the road, and I thought, wow, I wonder what that was all about. And it was a new car, and he could have been maybe, because he looked like he was a dressed-up guy,
mm-hmm.
But he could have been one of the bosses of these big mines. And he thought, I'll get this guy off the road, you know, frighten him, which he did, because I was meeting Susan at the 20K mark. She said that's where she'd be in the car. And so I got up there and I said, well, hey, we've got to get off this road. You know, I've got to get on a dirt road somewhere. It'll be a lot safer. So in doing my trek, I know that the danger there is cars and trucks coming. And sometimes people don't like stupid idiots sort of going up the road. They either frighten you, and I've got to walk towards the traffic, and cars do flick up stones out of there. It might not even be a stony road, but the stones get stuck in their tread, and they can spin out and, of course, hit my face or hit my eyes or something. So I usually duck my head at the last second. So anyway, death, I'm not too... fussed about it.
You both do seem like planners. I've seen you kind of, you know, be putting your stuff together for this adventure over the last, you know, few weeks. And it feels like that you're certainly not, when we talk about these adventures that you've been on, part of the reason that, you know, you're still here to tell these tales is I get the impression that you are both quite meticulous planners. Is that correct? The way that this together?
Yeah. I am meticulous about the car and what the preparation has done for me or does for something like this. And Susan is very, very meticulous in food and good organic food and looking after your body is very important. A lot of people might hear this and say, you're joking, Phil, but I do now look after my body a lot better than what I used to. And Susan is a great one for that in looking after what I eat and what I drink and all that sort of thing. So we're a great team, and she's a very loving wife, and I love her. And it's just, you know, we work very well together, because when we're together for 4.5 months, and you know, she enjoys doing what she does as well. She's not just my slave or anything like that. She loves it, and she loves the enjoyment and the outback and the challenge. And she will either walk back, she'll move up to 10K, or just briefly I will leave maybe at 5 or 6 in the morning. I'll go 5K, which is about an hour, and then Susan will catch me up, and if all's good, I'll just give her the thumbs up and she'll go on to 10K and then wait for me. But then she might walk back for a K or two to see how I'm going and just join in and walk back to the car again. And so it's a partnership there, and it's a very important partnership, and you've got to be, you know, you can't be fighting or anything like that. We understand each other, and yeah, it's great fun.
You know, you can't afford for her to storm off. You know, no. With your support van, Phil.
No way. Hey, so come back.
Well, look, mate, this has been an absolutely fascinating chat. I have loved that you agreed to come and do this. This is just been really delightful to hear these stories from you. People can follow this. Is the best place the website, philsusanmcdonald.com? Is that the best place for them to go?
That's the website, yes.
That's the website.
Or they could even just type in Phil's Birkenwills Trek and it'll come up.
Come up as the first
and
thing.
And then they can donate to the Fred Hollitz Foundation via our website, and then it's sort of attributed to our trek then.
So I will do another plug for this at the start, so people will have already heard it as well. But, there's a schedule in here as well. I'll be able to follow along. I'll be able to see where you are.
Yes.
I
can't hide there. I've got to, so I'll put that down there and, so it's all there. And so sometimes we'll be walking for 8-10 days between towns. So we've got to, because I'm only doing 30 Ks, and so we're out in the, and we're just cooking under
middle of nowhere.
Open fire, so it'll be quite interesting. And the dingoes and the pigs and all the different things out there and the camels.
I mean, amazing.
Yeah.
Is there... I know that you're just about to embark on this one, but is there another one still up your sleeve? Is there a magic sort of, you know, if I could, I'd love to do that adventure that you already have percolating, or is this the one for now and then you move on to thinking about the next one once this one's done?
I think so, yeah. A few people have said, what are you doing next? And I don't really know. They just sort of come into my brain. Yep. But I am kicking. I'll see how I go on this. But, I want to keep on doing things, but I haven't got anything in mind really. I've got to get this over. It's pretty big.
It's very big. What a great adventure. It has been such a great pleasure to hear about it. As Phil said, Phil's Birkenwills Trek. If you just Google that, it'll come up. Or you can go to philsusanmcdonald.com. And please donate and follow it along. And when you get back, I want to hear all about it and what happened. So thank you so much for coming and doing the podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Will. And it's great to have you as a next-door neighbour.
Thanks,
I'm very proud to have you.
Well, I'll make sure no one breaks into your house while you're away.